This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
The Delta Society. That's what it was called when my new puppy Sophie and I enrolled so we can become a therapy animal team. And this was way back in 2010. But today, after changing its name to Pet Partners several years ago to more clearly communicate its mission, it is the leading therapy animal recognized training program, as well as an advocacy group and much, much more. So I'm really, really delighted to welcome its chief mission officer, Mary Margaret Callahan. She's here today on the program, and we're going to talk about how this wonderful organization came about, the work that it does, and some really great tidbits that you may not know about therapy animals, about a big national holiday coming up, and about the things that Pet Partners does. So we already know how powerful the human-animal bond is to help us heal, both of us heal in body, mind, and spirit. What some of us may not know is the difference between what a therapy animal is versus an emotional support animal versus a service animal. And we're going to go into that as well. Pet Partners is sort of at the nexus of that concept and providing those in need with visits from companion animals and their caring people in all walks of life. Welcome to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I am Jody L. Teich, your host, and we are going to dive into all of this, but first we're going to take a short break from our sponsor. That's how we keep the lights on here at Pet Life Radio. So grab that healthy favorite beverage, get cozy, and we'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio. I'm Jody Teich, your host. Mary Margaret Callahan is the Chief Mission Officer of the wonderful Pet Partners Pet Therapy Organization. What is a therapy animal? We are going to go over that because not everybody is clear. So we're going to go behind the scenes with Mary Margaret to talk about what happens at a national organization like Pet Partners, the different things they do and how they do it, just in time for National Therapy Animal Day on April 30th. Welcome, Mary Margaret.
Thanks for having me, Jody. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. So to kick us off, would you explain the difference between a therapy animal, an emotional support animal, a service animal, so everybody's clear?
Absolutely. And let's be clear, these are three categories of animals that make huge differences in people's lives. They're all amazing, but they are easy to confuse. So my favorite way of describing this, the difference between them, is that both service animals and emotional support animals, those are a one-to-one relationship. One animal really serving to benefit one person, whether it's through helping them through their daily activities of living, or whether it's to help with a mental health problem, unbelievably important. But that one animal really supports one individual. Therapy animals, on the other hand, that's a one-to-many relationship. You've got one animal who's going out and interacting with maybe lots of different people over the course of time, right? Maybe they go visit a classroom and they get to interact with 20 kids who are learning phonics and practicing their reading with a dog. Or maybe it's one therapy animal and their handler who are going into a hospital and visiting from room to room to give those patients in recovery a little boost. Could be lots of different things, but the big one there is the animal is interacting with lots of different people. It's there to benefit lots of different folks, not just one other person.
Perfect. And with a service animal, their job is to protect their person because their person is challenged with something, right?
Yes, service animals are there to help promote activities of daily living. So it might be that that animal reminds the person to take their medication, or it could be that they know how to open a door, turn on and off a light switch, or maybe they alert their handler who may not have all their hearing that the doorbell is rung or something like that. They do lots of very practical tasks, and it's great, but they also provide wonderful companionship too.
Exactly. So tell us how Pet Partners came about.
Pet Partners has an interesting story. So more than 40 years ago, what we had were two brothers, the McCullochs, and one was a veterinarian. The other one worked in psychology. And what they were talking about is that they realized that the presence of an animal was really benefiting the patients of the one brother. And so these two brothers, in concert with Leo Bustad, who was also a veterinarian, developed what was called at that time the Delta Society, which wanted to shine a light on this idea that animals can enhance people's health and their health outcomes. And at that time, it was kind of a revolutionary idea, right? If we think back to how animals were perceived 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, 50 years ago, people didn't treat their dogs the way we do now, almost as children, right? People who are taking care of them, taking them to veterinary, have insurance for them, taking classes, doing enrichment. There's so many wonderful activities you can do. But for a long time, pets were really viewed as property. It's something you had and weren't necessarily, didn't have the same sort of connection now that many people do. So they really wanted to collect research, both anecdotal and evidence-based research, that showed that these animals enhanced our lives. And that's what the Delta Society was founded on, this idea. And from that, they then developed what was called the Pet Partners Program at the time, which was, how do we make this happen? How do we facilitate this? And that was the very beginnings of that visiting animal program. Back in 2012, we decided to switch our name to Pet Partners because that really had been the core, became the core activity of what we were doing. We're facilitating therapy animal visits all across the country for people in all sorts of different settings where maybe they couldn't have their pet with them, or maybe they don't have a pet of their own. And what we found is that the people who have the opportunity to volunteer with their pet find it just as enriching and wonderful as the people who are receiving those visits.
Absolutely. And I can second that. Some incredible experiences that Sophie and I had together. How did you come to Pet Partners, Mary Margaret?
Well, about a decade ago, I was looking to transition and finding new jobs. And I stumbled upon Pet Partners. And to me, it was like this perfect moment of all sorts of things in my life coming together and overlapping. My father was a veterinarian. So I grew up in a household with lots of animals, right? And really knew and appreciated and loved animals. I also had a background in education. So I had been a classroom teacher for a while, and then I had done some program education on the state level for healthcare workers. So I also had this crazy background in a little bit of health and medicine. And so Pet Partners was like this perfect combination: education, volunteerism, healthcare, and animals. Where does it get any better?
Yeah, perfect fit, it sounds like, for you and your background. So when you think of Pet Partners and its mission, what are the first thoughts that come up into your head?
I think one of the things that's so amazing is that this opportunity to share a beloved pet can enrich so many people's lives all at the same time from different angles, right? Obviously, we've talked about the person who's receiving that visit. That can be a life-changing visit for someone, right? We hear stories all the time about families who are comforted in a time of terrible distress, or patients who are motivated to comply with their treatment plans and start to get better because an animal has become involved in their treatment. But we also know that the volunteer receives a lot from that, an opportunity to give back to their community, an opportunity to build an even stronger relationship with their animal. And then, of course, the animal. And this is the thing I love the most about Pet Partners, is that this deep commitment to animal welfare, and not just animal welfare as we think about at the highest levels, like Animals have shelter, animals have food, animals have veterinary care. But truly, this commitment to the idea that therapy animals are choosing to do this. And it's okay if your animal chooses not to do this. It does not mean you're a bad pet parent. Not every animal is going to enjoy interacting with people they don't know. I had my beloved dog, Mimi. She was a Chihuahua, had her for years and years and years. And she loved me, but she wasn't even convinced my husband should stick around. Like, really, but it was her and me, right? She wasn't really
That's
even interested
Chihuahua
in
too.
really interested in anyone else. I was her person and she was fine with that. She would have been miserable being a therapy animal. And I would have never asked her to do that because I know she wouldn't have enjoyed it. And that's one of the things I love about Pet Partners is this idea that the people who are really great handlers, like I'm sure you were with your dog, like you're doing this because your animal also enjoys it. They find fulfillment in being with you and interacting with other people. And so when it's done right, everybody benefits.
My Annie would be a liability as a therapy animal. I would be worried. So we know at this point how many benefits there are to us and the animals who are the right kind of animals for being a therapy animal. Body, mind, and spirit, the benefits. There is plenty of empirical data. There are scientific studies, and we're going to talk a little later about your partnership with Habery. Tell us a little bit, like a few bullet points of what's come out of studies in terms of the benefits that animals have on our lives.
Absolutely. So, no, I think a lot of us who are pet parents can relate, right? That when we spend time with our animals, we reduce our own stress, right? We know that the cortisone's impacted, our heart rate is elevated, our blood pressure drops. There are true physical benefits to spending time with animals. So we know that. I think one of the things that's been very interesting that's come out, you know, there's been more and more talk over the last few years about this sort of epidemic of isolation, people feeling like they're not connected with people or having not enough connection with others, and they feel isolated. And therapy animals is one of those things that we've really seen. The presence of a therapy animal can facilitate interaction with people and really help people feel less isolated. When you think about individuals in assisted living or extended nursing care and things like that, the opportunity to come in and pet an animal, but also maybe socially engage with the handler who's brought that animal in, the great things that benefit that. The stress relief that we see, one of the areas where therapy animals has really taken off is on college campuses and even high schools during finals weeks and things like this. This high stress academic situations really help students to de-stress and focus on what they need to focus. That's a great benefit too. And then one of the other things that I love is the motivation that animals can provide in participating in your own care, right? So one of my favorite stories was a little girl who in so much pain, didn't want to get up and walk, didn't want to participate in her physical therapy. But when a therapy animal was there, she was the first one in line to get up and help walk that dog with a second leash. And that became her physical therapy because that was something she wanted to do. And so that kind of motivation couldn't have been found anywhere else, I don't think, for her. And it helped her recover.
Absolutely. You touched on high schools and college campuses. Gen Z has many, many struggles in epidemic proportions with their mental health. And animals, for those of the population who love animals, are such a wonderful bridge for better mental health, to feel less isolated, to feel less anxious, to feel more connected. And for those that can be a pet parent, it's a great way to learn responsibility, get exercise, et cetera, and so forth. So it is, for our largest population, an incredible way to help them with their mental health. So that's just another one. Absolutely. I love that. And seniors too. You know, the materials that you sent me absolutely touched on seniors as well as another population that therapy animals have been very, very instrumental in helping emotionally and
without question. Yeah. One, I have a wonderful handler who has a miniature horse that she brings into an assisted living care facility on a weekly basis. And she was coming in for a visit, and they sort of walked into the large sort of common room where they tended to visit. And she kind of looked around, and there was a gentleman who made eye contact. And so they started to walk over there. And, as she walked up, and, he said, "Oh, that doesn't look like any horse I've ever seen." And they had this lovely exchange. And it turns out he had grown up on a ranch surrounded by full-size horses almost his entire life. They talked about horses and horse care and the different breeds they knew and had this lovely conversation. And she thanked him for his time and said, "I hope you have a lovely lunch. Maybe we'll see you the next time we're here." And she started to move across the room to another group of people. And one of the nurses ran up to her and she said, "You were talking to him. What were you talking? I saw you talking to him. Did he say something?" And she said, "Yes, we had a lovely conversation. Such a nice gentleman." And she said, "He just joined us 2 days ago and he has advancing dementia and he hasn't spoken to anyone because he's been so confused about where he is." And these were the first words he had spoken in a lucid capacity while he had been there. And it was because he could connect to the presence of a horse and he had this wonderful, fulfilling conversation. And now they get to go back and visit him. And it's just one of those other examples about how you never know what kind of impact an animal might have on someone until they have the opportunity.
That I have goosebumps. I mean, that is a beautiful, so powerful a story. That short visit, who knows what the rippling effects could have been, and the subsequent, hopefully subsequent visits in prolonging this man's sanity and ability to enjoy life. So I just love that. That's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Thank you for sharing that. So it's my recollection, Mary Margaret, the training to become a Pet Partners team is pretty rigorous. Tell my listeners a bit about what's expected when you take the course through Pet Partners and what they should look out for if they're looking for a way to become a team outside of Pet Partners, because I know that you've developed a code of, standards, if you will.
That's right. So I would say that the number one mistake, if I can even call it that, that people make is they put all the emphasis on their animal and none of the emphasis on them, right? So people are worried about what kind of obedience skills do I need? And does my dog need to know how to do tricks and all these things? And so they hyper focus on making sure their animal is prepared. And let's be clear, you do want your animal to be prepared. They need core obedience skills, nothing crazy and fancy, right? But they should really have this trusting bond with you and sort of you guys act together as a team. So there's some of that that has to happen. But the fact of the matter is, you, the handler, the human, the person holding the leash, right? In the background, you're subtly facilitating all of this, right? We always say at Pet Partners, your number one job as a handler is to be your animal's best advocate. So what you're doing is you're trying to preemptively anticipate things that may happen. You know in your mind, "Ooh, my dog hates thunderstorms. They really get anxious." And so if it's in the middle of a giant thunderstorm and you have a visit scheduled, maybe you rethink that visit and you think to reschedule it because you know that's not in your animal's best interest. There's things like that that you can do to really set everyone up for success. And sometimes, until you've really thought through those, you don't realize them. Some people do them naturally. So our training, our handler course or workshop really focuses on what's your job as the handler? What are the things you can do? How are you going to facilitate this? And when you notice your dog is done for whatever reason, maybe they are tired, maybe they need a potty break, maybe they just don't like something and you don't even know what. It doesn't really matter. Your job is to gracefully find a way to facilitate an exit so that it doesn't become a bad interaction for your animal. And that's really what we're focusing on, making sure you're prepared for and ready to do. So all that animal training, it's great. It's fabulous. And I think one of the great ways to build a bond with your animal is to do some classes, right? Help understand how the two of you are going to communicate effectively together, but don't overlook the stuff that you too need to know as the human.
Absolutely. And that's great, great point to bring out, because I remember when we took the training all those years ago, number one, it was wonderful because they set up scenarios that could happen. Maybe they never happen, but they could happen where there's loud talking or loud noises or someone in a wheelchair or some other scenario that maybe, well, the point is that they want you to see if it triggers a reaction in your dog so that you know what your dog can handle, doesn't like to handle. You can learn ways to preempt, just like you said, because it's all about preempting. So I loved that. And it was very focused on being the person to be your dog's advocate, your cat's, your pet's advocate, to set them up for success. So I loved that. And then the other thing that I loved was, based on how your animal, they perceived your animal and your interaction with your animal, by the end of the course, there were opportunities and options to be in a low stress environment, to be in a medium, or a okay to be in a higher stress environment if your dog is just like a da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, happy-go-lucky for anything. So you also have the ability through Pet Partners and possibly through other programs to be in an environment and be certified in an environment, not certified, but, you know, greenlit for an environment that your pet can handle. In terms of people looking elsewhere, what should they look out for in researching a program to make sure it's a good one?
Well, a great place to start is to familiarize yourself with what are called the standards of practice for animal-assisted interventions, right? So if you Google therapy dog standards or therapydogstandards.org, right, you'll get this free document, evidence-based, and it really outlines sort of the bare minimum of what you should be expecting. So as you as a consumer, if you're a pet parent and you're like, ooh, I'm excited, I want to try this, I'm looking into programs around me, that could be a place to start to make sure that whatever program you're considering is meeting some of those benchmarks. In this day and age in the United States, I'm really going to suggest you make sure you ask questions about insurance. You should have insurance as a volunteer, and you shouldn't be asked to provide it to yourself. You know, people oftentimes go, oh yeah, I'm probably covered, I'm not going to worry too much about that. Don't make that mistake. So make sure there's a solid insurance plan in place. Make sure if something accidental did happen, you'd have the backing of your organization to support you. The other thing that's part of standards of practice, and I couldn't recommend it more, is that you should have some form of recurring evaluation. Like you said, right? You're doing these exercises and someone's watching how your animal interacts when a wheelchair goes by or when someone maybe raises their voice. And these are all things that are important, obviously, as you interact with the public. But I think that the thing that's so fascinating is everybody realizes at the beginning they should do that. But you become less capable of interpreting that for yourself and this animal that you love. And having someone else help you look at those things every couple of years, really important, right? Because the other thing, remember, you're asking your animal to do this. They don't get in the car and go, come on, Jody, let's go. We're headed to the hospital. You're the one that's getting them ready and setting it up and taking them there. So let's make sure that we're acting in their best interest. And an evaluation really can't help determine that, because sometimes it takes that independent third party to go, are you sure that this is what your animal wants to do? Because I see you're enthusiastic about it, but when I see your animal interacting with people, the body language they're showing doesn't indicate that to me. And sometimes having someone else see that can be really helpful.
Absolutely. You know, in 2010, we never thought about insurance. And things have changed a lot. So that's a wonderful point. And with Pet Partners, I do remember that every 2 years, I think it was, we had to get reevaluated. So that absolutely makes sense. We are going to take a quick break for our sponsor, but don't go away, because when we come back, we're going to find out from Mary Margaret about animal-assisted crisis response. What is that? And some very touching, more touching and powerful stories of therapy animals and the work they do. So refresh that favorite beverage, get cozy, and we'll be right back.
Dragging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back. If you've just joined, you're listening to the Pet Health Coach on Pet Life Radio, and I am Jody Teich, your host. We're here today with Mary Margaret Callahan of Pet Partners, the organization that is the champion of, behind the movement of pet therapy animals and pet partners with our animals. Mary Margaret, what is the animal-assisted crisis response that Pet Partners launched in 2019?
So I think we all are aware that sometimes in our society, terrible crises happen. Maybe they're natural disasters, maybe they're man-made disasters, maybe they're acts of violence. We know that therapy animals can be really beneficial in a lot of different situations. We also recognize that in situations like that, those crisis situations, therapy animals can really make a difference, particularly while people are sort of waiting to get help or get treatment or are in this period of limbo that's really taxing emotionally and psychologically. So what we also recognize is that those situations are elevated for everyone, the handler and the animal too, right? So what we wanted to do was for people who thought that they would like to serve their community in that capacity, we wanted to provide some additional training that would prepare them to be in settings like that. Things not to say, things to say, how to take care of yourself, right? What does that look like for you? How to ensure that your animal has been taken care of? So we launched a crisis response credential, additional training for our existing registered pet partners handlers. And let's be clear, crisis response is not for everyone, but for some people, it feels really good to be giving back to their communities in that way. And our program really is designed to be this neighbors helping neighbors kind of idea. Sometimes you'll see on TV people flying dogs across the country and things like that. When we stop to ask ourselves from an animal welfare perspective, is that really in the best interest of the animal? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But really, when we think about what helps rebuild communities after a disaster, it's neighbors helping neighbors. It's people who are there for the long haul, not just for a day, not just for a week, but it's people who maybe you get to build a relationship with, right? People who visit at the same place over and over again. And so that's really where our crisis response shines. And I think one of the things that's been so lovely about our crisis response program is the number of our volunteer teams who have developed a relationship and an ongoing visit with first responders. We think about people who work as firefighters, as EMTs, as people who are constantly dealing with a high level of stress in their jobs. This is a great break for them, right? To have a therapy animal team come in and de-stress in their workplace, amazing. And so it really can run the gamut. Do we have teams who visit schools after a school shooting? Absolutely. Do we have teams who are at the Red Cross tent after a hurricane? Absolutely. But do we also have teams who just visit their local sheriff's department on Wednesdays to cheer everyone else and reduce their stress? Absolutely.
I love that. And yes, it can make such a huge difference. You also have a program called Read With Me. Tell listeners about that.
Absolutely. So I think that one of the things that we see, and there's some beautiful stories out there, right, is that children who are reluctant readers need to practice, and practicing orally is oftentimes the way that's happened, but that can feel threatening, right? Someone who's listening to you may be poised to catch your mistakes or correct you. The beauty of that is a therapy animal is never going to correct your pronunciation. So we've seen just a ton of interest in schools, libraries, community centers, all these programs where they facilitate having therapy animals come in for children to practice their reading. It's been terrific. What a fun thing. So, you know, Lots of dogs think of that as just perfect nap time. They cuddle up on a blanket. Somebody's reading to them. It's great non-judgmental practice. But one of the things I also like is other species can participate in this too. Pet Partners registers actually 9 different species of animals. By far and away, the most popular species we register obviously is dogs. But we have some less common species too. And one of my very favorite read with me therapy animals is actually a parrot. And this wonderful parrot goes to an elementary school and does programs. But one of the things that's so fascinating about birds is that they're highly visually acute, right? They're a prey species. They always are looking around to see what's happening. And these pictures of this bird who looks at the pictures as the child turns the pages because they're visually acute gives the sense that the bird is trying to follow along as they're being read to. And it's just stunning.
Oh. I love that. I've seen video of children, 7, 6, 7, 8, reading to a dog and like they're reading to their baby, right? Or to their best friend. And it is such a charming, heartwarming thing to see, to experience, because it absolutely stimulates something that nothing else really can in the same way in that child. So yes, it is a very beautiful thing. And that parrot story is priceless. I would love video on that. That must be hilarious. Okay, let's talk a little bit about HABRI. And for those of you listening who don't know what HABRI is, it is the Human Animal Bond Research Institute. And it's another wonderful organization, and they spearhead research into the power of the human animal bond in health, wellness, and really across all lanes. You have a partnership with them. Tell us what that looks like.
This is really proud to be an evidence-based program, right? It's not just that we sort of have a sense that things might be a good idea. Like, we really do want to see that there's data that supports the decisions we make about what drives our program and how we prepare handlers to be successful. So we have a partnership with HABRI where we help fund research specific to therapy animals. The human-animal bond is a very, very broad topic, and there's lots of fascinating work out there that's been done and so much more that needs to be done. But what we really wanted to do was make sure that research was happening that really was specific to therapy animals. And that's where our partnership with HABRI comes in. We've had some wonderful studies that have been funded through that program and going on. It's unbelievably valuable. HABRI's got a tremendous website, a great resource for looking up articles in all sorts of things having to do with the human-animal bond. We value them so much.
Fantastic. They are a wonderful organization, and the work that they've funded has been brilliant in terms of health. So National Therapy Animal Day is coming up at the end of the month, April 30th every year. It is a national holiday that Pet Partners started. What do you have in store this year?
Well, National Therapy Animal Day was really meant to shine the spotlight on who the true stars of the show are, which are these fabulous animals and their handlers who facilitate this happening in every community across the country, right? So we really wanted to make sure that we could just stop for a moment and call out and thank and appreciate all these folks who do so much for everyone else. So April 30th comes by every year. Every year we celebrate National Therapy Animal Day. One of the things that we have done as part of our advocacy work is that we work to get proclamations in all sorts of different cities, states, and counties across the country. So we're currently collecting those. Great fun to have different cities recognize the amazing volunteers that come from each of those areas. It's just such a fun, wonderful day to stop and celebrate all of these fabulous therapy animals, past and present.
I love that. Unfortunately, we've come up to time, to the end of our interview. But if there is a story, you've given us a couple of beautiful ones that you would like to end with about a therapy animal experience in whatever type of facility, please share it with us.
Oh my goodness. I should have saved all my good stories for later, but really there are so many. That's what I think is so amazing. So this one actually, I think is a little different. So many stories that are as you would think, sort of traditionally, like this amazing benefit to the recipient of the visit. And in this particular situation, we had a handler with their dog going out and visiting, and they had the opportunity to interact with someone who is really kind of in a state of crisis, a lot of distress, right? And sometimes visits are very like conversational. There's talk that happens. Sometimes they're very, very silent. And I think what was so fascinating to me is this one felt really powerful to the handler, even though the handler never said anything. So they walk in, they've been asked to go visit this individual who's sort of in a waiting room. And the handler comes and says, I have my therapy dog with me. May we come in? The person sort of nods. So they walked in. And many therapy animals are great at sort of feeling emotion in a room, right? And so the dog looks at this individual and walks over, and immediately she starts sort of petting this wonderful dog. And oh, the dog's into it. It's leaning into it, getting petted. And she starts to cry. She's crying a lot. And the handler doesn't say anything. She knows it's been a stressful situation. She's just standing there. She's keeping an eye on her dog, who is doing fine, right? Just sort of absorbing some of that emotion. She stands there as this woman pets her dog and just openly weeps. And after what felt like a long time, because you're thinking standing there quietly while someone cries, even a couple minutes feels like a long time. But after 5, 6, 7 minutes, the woman sort of starts to regain some of her emotion and composure. And she sort of finishes petting the dog, and she says to the dog, thank you so much for knowing what I needed. And then she got up and left.
Wow.
And it's not perhaps a traditional visit in the way that lots of volunteers think about, right? You think about going to your elementary school or going to the children's hospital or visiting someone who's waiting for chemotherapy in the oncology center. And it just goes to show your presence is sometimes enough. And that's the opportunity you have if you choose to be a therapy animal team.
That is a beautiful way to finish. Anybody listening, if you have an animal that you feel could be a good fit, you can make a difference. Your animal can make a difference, such a difference in the lives of these people. So, Mary Margaret, tell people where they can find you if they'd like to explore that or learn more.
We'd love for you to come and learn more at petpartners.org. And if you happen to be a practitioner, someone who would like to incorporate a therapy animal into your practice, you're an occupational therapist, a nurse, a counselor, check out our sister organization, AAAIP, which does the same thing, but for professionals.
I love that. Thank you so much for your time today, Mary Margaret. And filling us in on a deeper level as to what Pet Partners does and the incredible power that these teams have to help people feel better, body, mind, and spirit. Really appreciate you.
Jody, thank you.
Okay, and thank you all for listening. As a pet health coach, my mission is to share holistic healing options for pets and their parents seeking a natural approach to wellness. A pet health coach empowers you through knowledge, resources, accountability, and support, and helps you achieve your health goals for your pet. So tune in next time for information, expert interviews, and tips to give the animals we love the longest and most vibrant lives we can. I'm Jody L. Teich, and this is The Pet Health Coach.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.